Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated, headquartered in Lafayette, Indiana, with branches in Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois, providing independent commodity, financial, and currency analysis to its clients and newsletter subscribers. On the web at myrmconline.com.
From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 26th day of August, 2015. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jackie Bakes. She's at Stuart Peterson from right here in Champaign County. We'll take a look at the cash grain market with the folks at the Anderson's Climbers facility near Logansport, Indiana, and discuss the weather forecast, too. That with Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. It all happens on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. You may find us anytime you'd like and listen to our whole programs online at willag.org.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
In Chicago for this Wednesday afternoon, futures finished the day mostly lower. Nearby September contract in the corn pit was down 3 3/4 at $3.61 3/4. December 3.73 1/4 down 3 3/4. And the March futures 3 3/4 lower at $3.84 1/4. July of next year, $3.95 in the corn pit, down 3 1/4. December 2016 down 1 1/2 at $3.95 1/2. September soybeans 16 1/2 cents lower at $8.77 3/4. November 8.65 down 12 3/4. And January futures 12 1/2 cents lower at $8.68 1/2. The March at $8.69 1/4 down 12. July down 12 1/2. And next year's November down 11 1/2. It's at $8.60 3/4 cents. Bean meal futures were off 3.20, finished at $3.24.40. The bean oil down 70 cents at $26.12. Wheat futures in the nearby September at $4.89 3/4 down 5 1/4. July of next year at $5.08. Down 3 1/2, and the hard red July up 1/2 at 5.23 1/2. Live cattle futures in the August were $1.10 lower at the end of the day. They're still trading at $142.57 1/2. The October at $140.82 1/2 are down 87 1/2 cents. August feeder cattle down 60 at this hour at $210.30, and September at $198.85. down 55 cents. Lean hogs in the October at $67.15, down 35 cents. December at $62.52 1/2, down 95 cents. Of course, you're listening to the Closing Market Report. It's a production of Illinois Public Media. In just 1 week, well, a little less than that now, we'll be at the Farm Progress Show. We sure do hope you'll find us in the U of I tent. That's just inside the main gate and to the right, about one block. Farm Progress Show in Decatur.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at agrigold.com.
Here's how the outside markets are trading at this hour. October crude oil at $38.80 a barrel, down 51 cents. Ethanol futures at $1.41 3/10, that's 2 7/10 cents lower per gallon. And September in the gasoline or RBOB wholesale price at $1.37 3/10, gasoline 6 6/10 cents lower for the day. Heating oil or diesel fuel is down 5 1/10 cents at $1.38 9/10, and natural gas at $2.68 1/10, 4 1/10 cents lower. Dow Jones Industrial Average now about 332 points higher at 16,048. The U.S. dollar up 0.591 at 95.14. And gold futures at $1,126 even, down $11.90. Here's what the weather forecast looks like for the Urbana-Champaign area for the day. Partly sunny and 73. Tonight, cloudy and 55. Tomorrow, 77 degrees under sunny skies. And on Thursday evening, partly cloudy, will go down to a low of 56. Things will start to creep up just slightly on Friday, not too much, but we'll get out of the 70s and go to a high of 80 degrees under partly sunny skies. Friday night, a few scattered thunderstorms, a low of 64, and then Saturday, showers and thunderstorms, partly sunny, a high of 80. Chance of precipitation Friday night into Saturday set at 30%. That will clear out by Saturday night. Scattered showers and thunderstorms, mostly cloudy, though, with a low of 64. And on Sunday, partly sunny skies and 83 degrees. Sunday night, partly cloudy and 65. More on the weather when we get to the bottom of the half hour.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, dedicated to improving the quality of life for Illinois farmers by offering financial products and services geared specifically to the farm community and developing partnership-based relationships with its agricultural customers.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on this 26th day of August. We're joined by Jackie Vake. She's at Stuart Peterson. Jackie, thanks for being with us. I think we ought to talk about currencies because this is where the downfall, at least the downturn, really started not so long ago when they decided to do some devaluation of the yuan. What do we know about the currencies and what kind of, I think a battle that's going on across the planet might be taking place?
Well, it's absolutely the truth, Todd. In fact, it's been dubbed currency wars, and we've seen it in the past already. It's basically a situation where you have a country that is dependent on export sales, let's say such as China, in so very many ways, and they just can't compete the way that they would like to compete. And so what they'll do is they'll devalue their currency. Now, there's a lot of other underlying things that go on in that particular case. I think in the case of China, they had their fifth rate cut of the year so far yesterday, and they still continue to have problems. So, we just don't know how deep their issues are. I believe part of the rate cut or part of the devaluation came because China very much wanted their importers who were buying from us and other countries to actually purchase state-owned grains. And they tried to entice them to do that, and they wouldn't. And so while this certainly makes it very real, because when you look at the devaluation, it's added 50, 60, 70 bushels, 70 cents a bushel to the cost, to the cost of them for our beans just because of the devaluation. Now, on the opposite side, what that will help is the devaluation helps China export more goods, because if your currency is more valuable than yours, you can buy more with less dollars, let's say. And so I think part of what's going on in China is there's a real nervousness, because of the lack of experience of the premier. Premier Wen had been with them forever, it seemed like. And then when he retired in 2013 and Li, won the position, he's never been in a circumstance. Kind of makes you wonder, doesn't it, that did Wen see something like this on the horizon and decide, hey, I'm getting out of Dodge, and I'm going to let this other young guy take it over? I think you could compare it to our situation here in the U.S. in 8 and 9, when your investors lost confidence in the government, so they just started pulling money and stocks out of the market. And so just to give you an idea, it looks because of the devaluation in the real in Brazil and the U.S. dollar continuing to remain strong, we're probably going to see another 3 to 5% increase in bean acreage down there. People take a look at currencies and they really don't think that they have a lot of impact. They have tremendous impact. Argentina's acreage is probably going to stay steady or go up to 2% for the very same reason. And if you look at this just as a total package, China devalued their yuan, but because the real has gone down in value and the peso has gone down in value, it's not more expensive to them to buy their beans or to buy their corn. The U.S. dollar, on the other hand, has not just fallen apart. And I think part of that is because we still don't know what the Fed's going to do. There's an awful lot more speculation out today that the Fed is likely not to raise any rates in September. And yet I saw an article just a few minutes ago from an Indonesian analyst who said, get it over with, raise the rate, tell everybody what it is, and stop all this speculation, So I think that eventually we'll look at that. But the other thing that's on the horizon for us in along with this currency situation is the pending election down in Argentina. I mentioned it a little bit this morning, but the main candidates are all running on a platform of lowering the export tax. And for us, that would be a terrible thing to have happen, because it could put a glut of beans right onto the market at a time of the year when we're harvesting, when we don't normally have, that competition from them. So it's a wild and crazy situation. Now, on the China side, Todd, you can see why some intervention has happened, because The Shanghai Index, I looked at the high of this past year was 51.78. I mentioned this morning today it was down at 29.22. It's been in the 21s. But at 29.22, that's down 44%. So for all of us in the U.S., let's take a look at it. Our high for the Dow this past year is 18,288.63. If we had that same drop here, it would put the Dow at 10,241.63. Do we think that we would have nervous investors or intervention coming from our government if that was happening? Absolutely. And so it just so happens that we are so very dependent on China and that, you know, people are nervous, and for good reason. I think that the close in the Dow yesterday was very disappointing. Hopefully we'll have a better close today. But until this settles down, it's going to be tough.
Speaking of watching sort of the charts and the numbers directly, there are some formations in the corn pit that are worth watching, I think. And you have been looking at something that's called a pennant?
Yes, the pennant is forming. It's where you take and you combine the oldest nearby high and the latest nearby high, and same thing with the lows, and it'll form a pennant, and it'll form a crossover point. And the crossover point in December corn is 373. You know, today we close at 373.25. You would consider that point to be a breakout point, okay? And in other words, if you can get a few solid closes above or below it, it has implications for the potential for the trend. Things didn't look good today for us, ethanol-wise on corn. You know, we had ethanol production and corn usage at 14-week lows. And while the stocks remained higher, you know, and I think, you know, we have to recognize that that's coming because of crude prices and an inability for us to, you know, there's a certain portion of ethanol that they have to have. And this currency war situation plays into ethanol demand also, you know, and so there's just so many things that are happening in the background. On beans, I looked at it on a November weekly. We also have a pennant there that points down to 834 as a crossover point. Wheat just generally has 491 as support. So, you know, it's a real rout going on out in this marketplace. I think you have a lot of investors that are saying, you know what, nothing here really makes a whole lot of sense. So I might just take my pennies and stand on the sideline for a while. And I think that when you see what's going on just generally in commodities, that's not to be taken lightly. We have to recognize that it isn't just end users and purchasers that drive this market. It's outside money. And, you know, we get a lot of the benefits from the outside money if it's pushing it higher, but it also comes back to roost if they decide to take it and wait to see once what's going to happen.
Before I let you go, one item, please, on the livestock.
Well, you know, I had a lot of questions on livestock today, and I have felt for quite a while that it's going to be difficult for live cattle to maintain the levels that they're at. And when you look at some of the information coming out in daily livestock, they're saying we could see a 10% increase in the herd. And then if you couple that with major increases from Australia, we're up about 60% on the year so far for imports from them, and the potential opening of the Brazilian border, or in other words, they can import to us too. This could be very negative. Now, we have to take a few things into account. That 10% increase is still a 10% increase on a much lower number than we had ever been at. Okay, so do I expect the market to just go and absolutely lose $20? No, I don't expect that. But at the very same time, I think, you know, as producers, in general, we have to be aware. And so a 10% increase in the herd is a good thing for the corn market, right? I mean, in most cases, you know, so, you know, that's a good demand thing. We know our hog market continues to grow in size. So we have things here that definitely support us. I personally think the next 2 years could be very challenging for us in terms of commodity prices. And yet, if the Fed decides to hold off on raising the rate, we maybe could see the dollar back off, you know, back into the 92 or the 90 level. And if we do that, that will, you know, hold back some of the negative implications we're seeing on exports. But, you know, we won't know that until we get into the September report. And then, of course, we're going to have the September USDA report, Todd, on September 11th.
Thanks so much, Jackie.
You betcha. Thank you very much. Talk with you soon.
Jackie Vakes joins us from Stuart Peterson on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report. Here's what's in the agricultural news for the day. The clock is ticking away quickly on the waters of the U.S. rule, or WOTUS. It's set to go into effect on Friday. Scott Yeager, Environmental Counsel for the National Cattlemen's Beef Association in Washington, D.C., outlined some of the lawsuits that have been filed against the rule and the status of some of those lawsuits.
There are a whole number of, I can't even count, probably more than a dozen different lawsuits at this point, and it seems like every day there's a new lawsuit against the WOTUS rule. A lot of states have also filed lawsuits. They're all around the country in different various venues. So what's happening right now is the appellate level petitions, those have already been consolidated into the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals. So where the action is right now is at the district court level.
Yeager outlines the status of the district court lawsuits, too.
Oklahoma filed a motion for preliminary injunction. There, the court said no. In Georgia, the states filed a motion there, and there was a hearing on that one on August 12th where Judge Wood said, okay, well, if the courts don't take any action to consolidate these cases, I'm going to take action and decide whether there needs to be a preliminary injunction by August 28th. So in the next 3 days, hopefully we will see some word from Judge Wood as to that. And then lastly, in the North Dakota lawsuit, there was a hearing in that case on Friday on the motion for a preliminary injunction. And I have not heard anything personally as to the outcome of that case. I've reached out to North Dakota's Assistant Attorney General for more information on how that went, but I have not heard anything yet.
An injunction keeps the rule from being implemented on Friday and will buy time for the rule to be reviewed. If there is no injunction, the rule will go into effect Friday. Without an injunction, Yeager says NCBA and other groups are arguing the alternative.
And then at the same time, a lot of groups, including NCBA, has requested that the EPA and the Army Corps themselves delay the implementation of the rule until everyone's had more time to understand how to comply from the regulated entity perspective, as well as enough time for the agencies to understand how they're going to implement and enforce the rule and to be consistent about it, because we've heard conflicting interpretations of how the rule will play out, which is very concerning for us.
And then there's congressional intervention.
At the same time as this rule is going final, Congress will be coming back into session September 8th, and we're really hoping that they take some action on Senate Bill 1140, which would have the rule withdrawn, brought back to the drawing board, for the agencies to do it again and do it hopefully a little bit more completely. The House has already passed a bill through the whole House that would do something similar.
That's Environmental Counsel for the National Cattlemen's Beef Association, Scott Yeager. We'll stay with news on U.S. EPA. The 90-day public comment period has just started for the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency's proposal for pesticide applicators who apply restricted-use pesticides. These pesticides are not available for purchase by the general public, require special handling, and may only be applied by a certified applicator or someone working under his or her direct supervision. The goal of this particular proposed rule is to reduce the likelihood of harm from the misapplication of toxic pesticides and ensure a consistent level of protection among states. EPA has determined that use of restricted-use pesticides would be safer with increased supervision and oversight. EPA is proposing stricter standards for people certified to use restricted-use pesticides and require all people who apply restricted-use pesticides to be at least 18 years of age. We'll stay in Washington, D.C. with national agencies. A food safety advocacy group has sued an arm of the U.S. Department of Agriculture, saying it illegally withheld public information on genetically engineered crops. The lawsuit brought by the Center for Food Safety, or CFS, against the United States Department of Agriculture's Animal and Plant Health Inspection Service, that's APHIS, claims the regulator has routinely failed to respond as required to request for records that relate to many concerns with the GMO crops. The lawsuit accuses the agency of violating the Freedom of Information Act. And finally, while the nation's ethanol mandate for gasoline is already under attack by some presidential contenders, one non-candidate says the RFS will survive. Chuck Grassley from Iowa, a Republican, says the renewable fuel standard has weathered other attacks and will continue to survive in the face of new ones. A couple of the presidential contenders, including Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker, have reportedly voiced that view. And Walker now wants a 2-year phase out of the renewable fuels mandate. Grassley says that's unlikely given the mandate for 36 billion gallons of annual production by 2021.
We're at the 15 billion limit that we have for ethanol from grain, so it's going to have to be cellulosic, and if you're going to go cellulosic, you're going to have E15. And if you don't have a mandate, you're going to have E15.
But Grassley adds the so-called blend wall of limited ethanol fueling facilities that big oil cites to argue for RFS cuts must also go.
Because I think it was based on 135 billion gallons of going to be used in our cars, and it's up to 145 billion. And I think at 145 billion, we can consume the 14 3/10 billion that the law says we ought to use this year, compared to the 13.8 billion that the EPA has put in for the maximum mandate.
The Renewable Fuels Association planned a formal request to EPA to boost summertime E15 blending after an unplanned refinery outage in Whiting, Indiana, caused a spike in Midwest gas prices. The group argues the RFS needs to be increased, not cut. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. The Closing Market Report is a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org. There you'll find all of our agricultural programming. On the line now is Alex Reed. He's at the Andersons, their Climbers facility outside of Logansport, Indiana, to take up the cash grain market. Thanks, Alex, for talking with me this afternoon. What do crop conditions look like in your area today?
Today the crop actually looks a little bit dry in some places. Could use a little bit of a drink. Beans kind of having some sudden death issues. But compared to 3 weeks ago, some guys are happy. It kind of depends on where you are. It's very sporadic. You know, some places are still just in a bad condition, but I think that the dryness for the most part has caused some guys to kind of see, you know, a little light at the end of the tunnel, per se.
And has your basis begun to reflect that by weakening at all?
Nearby basis has definitely begun to fade a little bit. For those who were able to get coverage in this tough end of July, August time frame, those who did get coverage have faded basis. We faded our basis a few cents here. Some people who are still searching for corn because they didn't get coverage are continuing to pay more to get corn, but new crop values, despite the better looking conditions that we have in some places, new crop basis has improved slightly, just because with the short crop we kind of anticipate that a lot more people will hold more corn this year.
And what are your new crop bids for the day?
New crop corn at Climbers we are 368, Delphi we are 373, and beans we are 840.
All right. And so do you expect that the basis will continue to do what over the next week and as we go into harvest?
It really depends on what the producer decides, because if they have room and they want to hold their crop because cash values right now are well below where a lot of guys want to sell, if they hold it, basis will have to go higher to make them move it. But if the crop's really wet and they don't want to bother with holding it and having bad condition issues, then it will come to town. But I think that basis in general will have to improve.
Alex, thanks so much.
Thank you, Todd.
Alex Reed is with the Andersons. He's at their Climbers facility. That's outside of Logansport, Indiana, and they produce ethanol there. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Back in just a couple minutes, we'll take a look at the agricultural weather forecast with Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City.
Support comes from Stewart Peterson. Since 1985, Stewart Peterson has offered strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops dynamic strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. Information is available at stewart-peterson.com.
It's National Cherry Popsicle Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1784, Stephen McCormick was born. An American inventor, he was the first to produce a practical cast iron plow with detachable parts. His cast iron board also had an adjustable wrought iron point mounted beneath, able to decrease the draft while deepening the furrow. Before that, he increased the productivity of a water-powered grist mill by improving the shape of the lower millstone. In 1800, Félix Bouchet was born. A French naturalist, he was one of those who believed that life was created from non-living matter in processes such as fermentation and purification. He was, of course, eventually proved wrong. In 1856, William Henry Perkin received a patent for dyeing silk, cotton wool, or other materials with a purple or lilac synthetic dye, the first synthetic dye ever produced. In 1900, Hedley Marson was born. An Australian biochemist, he spent three decades with his colleagues researching the role of cobalt and other trace elements in animal and plant nutrition. He discovered that ailing sheep often recovered when given cobalt salt supplements. And in 1950, Ranson Olds died, an American inventor. His progressive assembly line in automotive production foreshadowed modern mass production methods. And that's this day in agricultural history.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Wednesday afternoon. Drew Lerner is here with World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City. Drew, tell me about the weather forecast. It's been beautiful in our part of the world for several days, and looks like it's going to get a little bit warmer, but not too bad over the next several days.
Yeah, you know, I think we've come over the big hump for the summer. Here we are, breathing down the neck of September. It's not going to be long, and we'll see more of this warm day, cool night scenario playing out across the region. So it's hard to believe that we've already come to the end of this growing season, or not too far off in the future. But the forecast is going to be relatively dry by us. We do have one round of thunderstorms that will move across the Midwest as we move through the night tonight, and be more likely actually Thursday into Saturday. And this will come out of parts of Nebraska and parts of maybe southeastern South Dakota, and from there working its way across Iowa over to Michigan. And a few thundershowers will trail to the south of that as we move into the heart of the weekend across parts of Illinois, Indiana, and Ohio. So just a little bit of rain. It's not going to be a lot. It's not going to really turn around the drying trend. It'll slow it a bit. And we will warm up as that passes off. So temperatures during the latter part of the weekend into next week will probably be working their way up into the 80s and lower 90s on a more regular basis across the region.
I think I know the answer to this question, but is there very much of a correlation between cool temperatures in the month of August and cooler or too cold of temperatures in the month of September or October?
Not a very good correlation, no. In fact, quite often when you have a very cool August, you tend to have a little bit of warmer bias sometimes in the autumn season, but it doesn't necessarily focus on one particular month or the other. So can't go down that road necessarily, but I can tell you that our official forecast is for the month of September to be warmer biased in the lower parts of the Midwest, and in particular the southwestern Corn Belt, into the central plains and back down towards West Texas. That whole area there not only will have a warmer bias, but it will also be a drier one, and some of the winter wheat country out there will probably firm up a little more than some folks would like to have, and there'll be some chatter about, oh, here we go again type deal again.
Speaking of that, I think Ukraine and Russia have been fairly dry. How are they setting up for their sowing season this fall?
Actually, things look fairly good. It is a little on the dry side, though, as you mentioned. In both those areas, we are not expecting to see a tremendous amount of rain for a while. It's not a bad scenario for right now, but as we get into September, their window for planting is a bit on the narrow side, so it's going to be very important that they get a decent rain in those southern areas as we get into the latter part of September and early October. For the northern areas where the planting is already underway now, soil moisture is really ideal, and they will move aggressively in those areas that usually freeze up soonest. In fact, their first frost and freeze date is probably just about 5 to 7 days away in some of those northwestern Russia locations.
Drew Lerner is with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Just a quick reminder that you can catch up with us next week at the Farm Progress Show in the U of I tent. That's just inside the main gate and to the right about a block. We'll be putting on programs at 10 o'clock and 2 o'clock each and every day. Orion Samuelson will take the stage in the morning. I'll be there in the afternoon. Some of our special guests next week will include Steve Freed from ADM, Bryce Knorr from Farm Futures, Jerry Golke of the Golke Group, Alan Brugler will be there, and so will Jerry Goodell. I hope you can stop by and see us at the University of Illinois tent just inside the main gate and to the right, about a block.